This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferrack.
And I'm Gene Purcell. We're recapping the biggest news stories of 2013 right now with David Redzlock. He is a professor of political science and director of the Eagleton Center for Public Interest Polling at Rutgers University.
And we'll want to hear from you as we talk about the top stories in national news. You can join at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. What was the most important story or the one that had the most lasting impact? You can email also talk@WPR.org. David Redzlock is with us. David, welcome to Central Time.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Well, there's a lot of ways we can define most important story. I wanted to throw it to you, first of all, is there something that you think we're going to look back in future years and look back at 2013 and say, that was the big one in the United States, that's the one that made a difference in the long run?
This has been quite a year, and there have been an awful lot of stories. At one level, the Edward Snowden story, the issue of the NSA documents and the documents he's been releasing for a good part of the year really is important. It's really important because it's brought the issue of privacy to the forefront. It's brought the issue of what our government's doing to a lot of people's eyes that hadn't thought much about it. So that's certainly one, but you know, to say it's the most important, I think we have, you know, the rollout of Obamacare and how badly it was handled, although I think in the end that may be a blip down the road. The election of Pope Francis, while it's certainly not just a national story, you know, has huge implications in this country given the number of Catholics and the way he's approached the papacy. I you know, it's just been an amazing year.
We'll dig deeper into some of those stories, but you used a great word there, blip. I think sometimes in the media, that thing that's happening today looks so huge, and we're all in a tizzy about it, and sometimes a week later or a month later, or maybe it takes a year, we've all pretty much forgotten it, and it won't end up in the history books. What do you think it is that makes something break past the 24-hour news cycle and be that big story?
Well, you know, I think part of it is it has, you know, wide-ranging impacts on people, not just on government, but on people. And while the Obamacare story, the rollout failures certainly do, those will undoubtedly be fixed over time. And I think 5 years from now, we'll look back and say, well, yeah, it got kind of screwed up, but, you know, things got resolved over time. On the other hand, something like the Snowden case, I think the repercussions for how the government operates, both within the country, but also with our allies and enemies, is going to be a very long-term story.
One commonality between those stories, we keep seeing in polling, declining trust in government or lower opinions of Congress or the parties or the president. Is that a big story that maybe gets reinforced by things like the Edward Snowden leaks or the difficult rollout for something like the Affordable Care Act?
Yeah, it does. I think people, a year ago, I don't think we thought trust in the government or ratings, for example, for Congress could get as low or any lower than they already were, and it's been a continual decline throughout 2013. Congress, I think I saw something somewhere where people have a more positive impression of cockroaches than they do of Congress. The president, of course, his own ratings have suffered tremendously in the Obamacare failure. But, you know, there's this general issue, I think, that people are really wondering, you know, what is going on with government these days? Can it really do the things we need it to do?
Another big issue that was on our minds through the year were things related to the budget, the fiscal cliff, all these deadlines that they barely met and then finally didn't meet with the government shutdown. And that's when I think that's going to keep going into 2014, regardless of a deal they recently reached.
Yeah, the deal is only partial. It's still got to figure out the debt ceiling once again very soon. At one point, I thought the shutdown was the big story, right? And then it was immediately followed by, you know, more Snowden leaks and Obamacare. But the shutdown is important. It's been part of that reason people are just kind of fed up with it, the sense that we send politicians to Washington, and rather than try to get things done, they draw these lines in the sand, and they, you know, take these positions, and they absolutely refuse to compromise. The system is based on compromise, and, you know, that shutdown, that 16 days, that had very serious impacts on real people, kind of indicates how far we've come from that at this point.
The idea of compromise sometimes gets treated as a dirty word in certain places, like people who are watching Congress, even people within Congress. Is that a growing trend, or has that element always been there, do you think?
Well, it ebbs and flows really over time. That our government is really designed for it to be difficult to get things done sometimes. But since the rise of the Tea Party in 2010, the difference is palpable. You've got folks in Washington who truly have gone there to muck it up, to say, I don't want things to happen. I want to shut it down. And that is a very different thing than we've had through most of the history of this country.
You know, speaking of just things to watch for in 2014, I don't want to lose sight of the NSA leaks, the Edward Snowden leaks. That is definitely a piece of unfinished business right now. We're seeing panels recommending at least some changes in how the NSA surveils us, or if the NSA surveils us. Where do you see this issue going as we head into a new year?
It's really, really difficult. I mean, firstly, we're in a very different world in terms of electronic surveillance and the ease of which government can track what we're doing. You know, everywhere we go with our cell phones, somebody can know where we are if they want to. And you know, all the old rules don't necessarily apply all that well in an environment where supercomputers can crunch through, you know, trillions of bits of data to find that needle in the haystack. So I think that's what Congress is going to be grappling with as they try to decide if there are new rules. And we have an administration that I think many liberals are incredibly disappointed in Obama, because he's taken, you know, what seems to be a pretty reactionary position about government surveillance and about the role of the NSA. And he seems to be resisting even the recommendations that have been put out there.
There are privacy advocates who are really upset about this. You mentioned some on the left and certainly some on the right, very upset about this. Do you have a sense that the public is really worried about this, or is this a case where we kind of know we don't have that much privacy and this is not something that a lot of us are that excited about?
I think there's been a real sea change on that in the last few years. In fact, I do think people are all but throwing up their hands saying we just have a different world. Young people, particularly millennials, we talk about them, really have a completely different view of this in the sense of privacy. That they're, you know, you just can go on Facebook and Twitter and other places, and the sense of privacy is so different these days that I think that's where we're going. I think people will just recognize that it isn't there.
We're recapping the biggest news stories of 2013 from around the nation. We have David Redlosk with us. He's professor of political science, director of the Eagleton Center for Public Interest Polling at Rutgers University.
And we'd like to hear your vote for the biggest news story of 2013. Out of all the stories we've been talking about, what has stuck with you so far? That NSA story we've been talking about, Obamacare, or something else, maybe sequestration. There's lots and lots to talk about. Give us a call at 800-642-1234. Make your nomination for the biggest news story of 2013. 800-642-1234, or you can post a comment on our Facebook page.
This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Gene Purcell. We're recapping the biggest news stories of 2013 right now with David Redlosk. He is a professor of political science and the director of the Eagleton Center for Public Interest Polling at Rutgers University.
And we're polling you. What was the most important national news story this year, do you think? We've talked about a few, the Edward Snowden NSA leaks, the rollout of the Affordable Care Act, the congressional budget difficulties. Was one of those the most important, do you think, or something else? Call in with your nominations at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or email talk@wpr.org. David, a couple other things that really captured our attention during the year. The George Zimmerman trial over the death of Trayvon Martin. It wasn't a big congressional act, obviously, but it certainly had everybody talking and thinking about race and guns and a whole lot of other stuff.
It did, and in particular thinking about guns. I mean, race, of course, is a piece of this, but in some respects, coming as it did with the after the Newtown shootings, Connecticut, other shootings that have been somewhat high profile in the last few years, and now the idea of somebody who's just carrying a gun to protect the community in some way, it led into that gun conversation that seems to have just completely petered out. Which is kind of fascinating. I think in the aftermath of Newtown and the Trayvon Martin case, I think we all thought there would be a lot more going on than just some brief conversation that dissipated.
And that's not an uncommon storyline. After a major shooting of one sort or another, there's a brief flurry of talk that something might change in gun laws, and rarely, if ever, does much change.
Yeah, rarely. And of course, part of this is simply the power of the National Rifle Association as a lobbying group in terms of its ability to get its members moving, to get things to kind of have congressmen quaking in their boots. But it's also a matter of a Congress that can't really take action on anything that's controversial at this point. There's just between the House being controlled by the Republicans, the Senate by the Democrats, the Tea Party, the unwillingness to compromise, I suppose we shouldn't have been surprised that this one petered out as well.
And one, this has been a long, busy year, the Boston Marathon bombing.
I know. It's funny, as I was kind of thinking about it for today, what was going on, there are all these stories, many of which have kind of faded. And in some sense, we tend to think of at the end of the year wrap-up like this. It's the most recent stories that immediately come to mind as the big ones. But, the Boston Marathon shooting, or bombings rather, of course, had everybody glued to the story, both in terms of the question of whether it was terrorism, in terms of, how could this happen, and then, of course, the outcome of it. But that now feels so long ago, not to minimize it at all, but this has just been an incredible year in the sense of stories going on. I don't want to forget about same-sex marriage.
Right. News breaking as we speak,
right,
almost.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. I mean, I don't think going into this year anybody thought we'd have what has been a real sea change. I mean, public opinion has been shifting over the last few years, but it's now majority support for same-sex marriage. We're seeing, of course, the Supreme Court's ruling over the summer setting the groundwork, frankly, even though I don't know that they intended to, for things like the Utah case. And I think that's one of the things that a few years down the road we're going to be looking back and saying that was the tipping point.
I was going to – that's exactly the phrase I was going to use, was, and a lot of other people have used, is tipping point. Why? Why did this critical mass suddenly get achieved on that issue?
Part of it is public opinion. I mean, part of it is that attitudes have shifted. I think you go back a few years when Massachusetts legalized same-sex marriage, and the world actually did not collapse. And while some people might disagree, Massachusetts did not collapse. I mean, there was this sense that the very small victories over time, and, things aren't that different after the fact. You get courts in Iowa and other states weighing in, and, at some point you just build up this sense that there is an inevitability to it. The Supreme Court ruling, the irony about the Supreme Court ruling is it wasn't that liberal a ruling. The ruling striking down DOMA struck down DOMA simply because that's always been a state issue, marriage. And the court said the federal government has no right to overturn what the states do on this. Well, enough states are moving in that direction that I just think it's a non-issue down the road.
We've spent most of our time with things situated here in the United States. I want to look at foreign policy and foreign relations. The civil war in Syria is one of the biggest stories in the world going on, and it was a weird change here. It looked like the United States was on the verge of getting very directly involved in that, and then we didn't. That seems like one of the weirder twists, I think, in the year.
Yeah, I think it was. I think that the Syria situation, we certainly all expected in August and September that we'd be fighting yet another battle, or at least we'd be in there bombing, even if we weren't on the ground. And of course, that's not what happened. Instead, Russia, of all places, intervened. Russia essentially convinced Bashar Assad, the president of Syria, to give up his chemical weapons, and that process is now underway. I don't think the United States government was particularly happy about it. You'd think you'd be happy about the getting rid of the chemical weapons, but I don't think they're happy about the role Russia suddenly took center stage here. But the other thing that hobbled Obama with these red lines he kept drawing and then kept allowing to be crossed was public opinion again. I mean, U.S. public opinion was so set against any intervention in Syria, I think it would have been extremely difficult without very direct provocation on the United States for Obama to actually do what he claimed he would do.
Is there intervention fatigue, do you think, after Iraq and Afghanistan?
Yeah. There is, absolutely. I think we don't want to police the world right now. The public, doesn't see that we gained anything out of either of those two wars. And, of course, Afghanistan is still going on. We're still getting reports of service members being killed there. And I think the public is just fed up with it.
It's, a story that's going to keep going, whether we're directly involved or not.
Absolutely,
a massive refugee crisis, a war zone.
Right.
If it's even if we're not directly involved, it's something that will still be going on.
Well, and that's the thing, right? I mean, so the focus on the chemical weapons, all right, maybe that's been dealt with, maybe, but the war itself is still going on. And it's unclear where it's going. Another problem we face is that the rebels don't necessarily look like good guys to us either.
Also in the Middle East, a possible deal in the works, and this was kind of a surprise, with Iran on nuclear weapons or nuclear development there.
Yeah, it seems like Iran may be reaching the point that, they need to come back into the world in some sense, and maybe there's some recognition of it. They could be playing a really important role in the Middle East just by the virtue of their location and their size. But the sanctions that continue, the position they've had in the world that's continued, I think really hobbles them. So it could well be that internally in Iran, with the new leadership there, they're saying, we've got to reengage somehow. And they can't reengage unless something's done about the nuclear issue.
And that was enabled by an election result, a less conservative, by Iranian standards, president elected.
Right, and that means, this is still, it's still not a pure democracy. So this election result, while it mattered, of course, it still matters what the clerics, what the Ayatollahs behind it say, and apparently there is a move to open up, at least to some degree. And again, a lot of this could be simply financial. It's been costing them massively, and it's hurt their country massively.
Another story, very recent one, the passing of Nelson Mandela. He was old, he'd been in ill health for a while, but it really captured the attention of the world and got a lot of people thinking about his legacy and maybe in some cases how they could apply that in their own country around the world.
Yeah, it did. Mandela was, was one of those figures that you knew was there, but in some sense we didn't think a lot about him, once he was no longer president of South Africa. But of course his story is an incredible story, a story of, more than a quarter century in prison, coming out to lead a new government, and then not focusing on retribution, but focusing on reconciliation, something that seems a pretty short supply these days. So in some sense, Mandela's passing just really focused on the effect that one man can have. Have they solved the problems in South Africa? Of course not. There's still plenty of problems, poverty, other issues. But what they didn't do was have the kind of blowback on the white government once it fell, and that was due to Mandela.
Assessing the year as a whole, and a lot of people writing up the year in review stories have been painting this as a bad year back home now for President Obama. Do you think that's a fair assessment? It's not been a great year for him?
It's not been a great year for him, and a lot of it's been brought on by him, by himself. I mean, either in kinds of statements he's made, the red line in Syria, the statements about Obamacare, or the failures, quite frankly, of managing projects like the Obamacare. You know, the president isn't outwriting code on the website, but it's fascinating that nobody has really paid a price in his administration for what's happened. And I think that's the crux of the problem he faces. People are not seeing him as an effective leader right now.
I want to spend a minute or so on 2014. What are the things you're going to be watching for? What are the big stories? Obviously, some will surprise us, but what are you looking for in 2014?
In many ways, it's just at the moment, in the early part of the year, it's a continuation, right? It's a continuation of Pope Francis, for example. I think that story is huge. I think the recent public opinion poll showing, you know, just the level of admiration for the Pope among, you know, Catholics, but among non-Catholics. And I think his role in the world could be very, very important as he tries to lead the church in what appears to be a somewhat different direction. But, you know, it's a continuation of things like the NSA questions. It's a continuation of the Obamacare rollout. You know, will Obamacare's failures at the beginning be a blip in 5 years? 2014 is going to decide that.
David, thanks a lot for joining us and spending this time with us.
You bet. Happy to do it. And have a happy new year.
You too. That's David Redlosk. He's professor of political science and director of the Eagleton Center for Public Interest Polling at Rutgers University.